Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been doing, what we've been watching, what we've been reading, all of that jazz. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ, I want to start this episode with some news about the podcast. So starting next week, we're going to be rebranding this show into Slash Film Weekly. And our format is going to change. So this Friday's episode, which we've already recorded, is going to be the last episode of the daily version of the podcast. Would I personally love to keep doing daily episodes of the show? Yes, but that's not a viable path forward for us right now. So we're going to adapt and we're going to try out the weekly format. I actually searched for the term movie news in the Apple Podcast app the other day. Our podcast was the first thing that came up, which was very surprising to me. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. So I think this revamp actually gives us an opportunity to kind of get back to our roots a little bit and lean more into serving that audience who's hungry for movie news and staying more up to date on the biggest stories and stuff like that in Hollywood. So we're going to transition to only doing the show once a week. We're going to have a supersized episode every week. And that will give us space to really dig into some of these topics in a way that we haven't really had time for previously. So for now, we're going to put more of a focus on news. But I'm also really excited that we're going to be able to continue to bring people all the great interviews that they've come to expect from us. So I've heard from several of our listeners that, and this has been like, people have been emailing me about this for years, that they've been annoyed with the fact that we'll put an interview up for a big movie on the day that the film is released. So the plan now is going to be to spread multiple interviews throughout the show and play any of those spoilery conversations like a few days after the movie or show in question comes out. So if a big movie comes out on Friday that we have an interview for, we'll wait until maybe the next Wednesday or whatever. I think right now the plan is maybe that for this weekly show to go up on Wednesdays. We'll see. Give me some grace here. I'm trying to figure it out on the fly. So those spoiler conversations will go up in that episode, you know, so people will have like basically a chance to catch up with things and kind of be ready to hear all those details. So we might end up tweaking and improving the format even more as we get into a new groove. So stay tuned as we shift into the 3.0 era of the podcast. I think I have that right. And also I just want to say real quick, I don't typically post very much on Blue Sky, but I'm going to put a link to my account in the show notes, because I'm planning something in the weeks ahead that I will eventually share there, and our listeners might be interested in that. So that's all I'll say about that. And we can go on with the show here. So let's get into what we've been doing. I had a chance to meet you in person, BJ, which was so delightful.
We had dinner. We had really delicious burgers. It was great.
We did. It was fantastic. I met up with you and your wife, Harmony. We had dinner. It was great. We were friends in real life, which was very special. So I loved that. So I just wanted to, I mentioned, I think it was last week on the show, that I got a chance to meet Bill in person. So it was great that I got a chance to see you while I was in LA as well. While I was there, I also went to, have you ever been to Jazz at LACMA, the Los Angeles, Contemporary Museum of Art? Is that what I think that's what that's
yeah I've been to LACMA, but I've not been to Jazz, so this I'm very excited to hear what you have to say.
It's basically just a free jazz performance that's outside, and if people aren't familiar with LACMA, they might have seen it in different movies and stuff. There's like an art installation outside where there are a bunch of lampposts all together, and I'm sure you've seen people on, you know, take pictures of that on Instagram or whatever. But it's kind of like right on the other side of that. And they set up a big stage and a jazz band gets out there and they just play for like a couple, I want to say it's from like 6 to 8 p.m. or something like that. And it's a free event, happens on Friday nights. And I had never been there. I mean, I lived in LA for 11 years and I never even knew that this was a thing. But we met up with one of my wife's coworkers, and it was like a big picnic kind of experience where, like, because it's a free show, people show up, you know, a couple hours early or something and just kind of throw down blankets and like claim different areas of this kind of there's actual seats, but there's also kind of behind the staging area, there's like a big kind of grassy park area that's like right outside of the museum. And so people just like bring their own food and drinks, and like you're allowed to bring whatever, wine and all this stuff. And like nobody, you know, that's one of those things where I think like in New Orleans, you can like literally walk around with like open containers of alcohol, and you can't really do that in Los Angeles. But this is one of those experiences where you can just, yeah, everybody like takes it really easy and just kind of like lays back and chills out, and the weather was great, and you're just listening to free music. So it was a really cool experience, and I just wanted to put that on the radar of anybody who might be in LA or visiting LA, because like I said, I just didn't even know this was a thing, so I thought it was pretty cool. So you'll have to let me know, BJ, if you ever end up going over there. Definitely. And I would recommend getting there like a little bit early to maybe a couple hours early to lock down a good spot if you actually care about like being close enough to like really get the full blown jazz experience. We were far enough away where I could like barely hear the music, but it almost didn't matter because it was just more about the vibe than anything else. So
yeah, I love like great. The outdoor music picnic sort of areas that exist, and they seem to be going away, so I definitely will check this one out.
Yeah. So now I'm in Chicago, and I had a chance to visit Cloud Gate, which is also known as the Bean, and I went to the Art Institute of Chicago, which was really cool, and saw some you know, artwork that was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, one of my favorite movies. So
I mean, you have to when you go to the Art Institute.
Yeah, and that's such a cool museum. Like, we were only in there for a couple hours, and I feel like I definitely could have spent at least all day, if not multiple days, wandering around in there, because it was like we visited so many rooms, and there were still a ton that we didn't have a chance to get to, and it seemed like every room had at least one banger art piece in there. So just highly recommend dropping by and checking that out. I assume you've been, and you know, you grew up in the Midwest, so what's your experience like visiting Chicago, BJ?
Oh, so I grew up outside Chicago. Everybody thinks that I'm from Cleveland because I lived there for 7 years, but no, I grew up outside Chicago. So like that's my home sweet home. It's my favorite city in the world. And I love that you went to the Art Institute. I love that, you know, it's nice that you called it Cloud Gate. No one calls it Cloud Gate. but yeah, no, Chicago's the best. If, you know, when my time in LA is done here, that's probably where I'll go back.
Yeah, it's such a cool city. I haven't had a chance to explore the entire city. I'm staying in the kind of like Magnificent Mile area, and it's just really nice. And this is my first time being in Chicago since I've been an adult, and really like it a lot so far. So, and then we also had a chance to see a Cubs game. We went on Monday night. The Cubs were playing the San Francisco Giants. They won 9-2. It was great. It was just like a really cool experience being in Wrigley Field. I wish we had time to rewatch Rookie of the Year before we went to Wrigley Field, but we didn't have time to do that. But I'll retroactively enjoy that experience even more having been in that ballpark or stadium or whatever it's called. So yeah, just great stuff. I had, you know, I got to do like a hot dog and all that while you're there. So just a terrific experience. And I don't even like baseball that much. I grew up playing baseball, but I never care about watching baseball on TV. But obviously there's just something kind of magical about seeing it in real life. So
and Wrigley Field is like the ultimate place to watch a ball game because it is such like a classic field, and it doesn't have a lot of the updates that a lot of like the new tech, I guess, like stadiums do. So it just feels different. The vibes are different.
Yeah, I went to a Dodger game a few years ago. This is probably 2018, somewhere around there. And so that was the last professional like MLB baseball game that I'd been to. And this is the first time that I've been to a game where the pitch count has been instituted or whatever. So I think that they have like 15 seconds or something between pitches, which just made the game go so much faster. And or at least it felt that way as a viewer. So that was one thing that I remember when I was transitioning from playing baseball as a kid to like, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. Maybe I'll get into it more as a fan and kind of watch the games. It just felt like the games took forever to actually like elapse. And so this pitch count thing that they instituted a few years ago has really sped things up and been an effective change on that front. So that's what I've been doing. What have you been doing, BJ?
So I have some pretty big like bucket list items for me. The first one is that the Criterion Mobile Closet visited Los Angeles, and it was parked outside of Vidiot's for a couple days, and that is where my wife works. And so I got to go into the Criterion Mobile Closet. It is crazy to go in there and actually see it and see everything that they have. It really is a closet. It's a lot smaller than you think it's going to be, but we got to go in there. We only had like 3 minutes, but you give them your phone, they'll prop the phone up. So that way you can, if you want to do like your own little Criterion video and talk to the camera about movies you like, you can. I felt so awkward doing that. So I now just have a video on my computer of me like looking in awe at a bunch of spines of movies. But the movies that I ended up taking, I took Okja and Ghost World, a movie that I love and have tattooed on my arm. And Criterion took a picture of my tattoo with the copy of Ghost World, which was so surreal. And they kept that for their archives. I was like, that's crazy. And then wow. My wife got Police Story 1 and 2 and Ken Russell's Women in Love. So, you know, a very Wives Colangelo choice in the Criterion Mobile Closet. But yeah, people were like lining up for that. Like they were showing up at like 5:30 in the morning. There were people that waited like 8 hours in line in the rain just to do the 3 minutes. And everyone was like, it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it.
Wow, man, that's so cool. So I think I want to say the real one, and please correct me if I'm wrong about this, BJ. I want to say the real one is in New York City, right? Like in yeah. Criterion's offices. And then when they have celebrities go in there, they just give them the discs for free. But I think the mobile version, you still have to pay for it, but you get a discount.
You have to pay for it. You do get a discount, and you get, there's a maximum of three. You can get three titles. So we just got the two.
Okay.
Because the other thing is like we own so much Criterion that it was like, what do we yeah. not have already?
Yeah, man, that's cool.
Yeah, so there's that.
Yeah, I wish I would have had the chance to do that because it was happening while I was still in LA, but I was just like, I have such a limited amount of time here, and I know that I'm probably gonna have to stand in line for like 6 hours or something, yeah. and I just can't bring myself to do that. So good luck to anyone who might be visiting the Criterion Mobile Closet as it continues its journey around the country. But I'm really awesome. I mean, I'm very thrilled that you had a chance to do that, BJ. It sounds amazing. So what else have you been up to?
The other things I've been up to, I saw my first pull quote on a billboard. That
nice.
Is a very surreal experience. It's for Thunderbolts, a movie that I really love. If you've read my review, people already know that I love it. And, you know, the thing is, pull quotes are cool. And sometimes they get like used in ads on like YouTube. And it's like, oh, my God, that's my thing. That's really cool. But something about it being on a billboard is just different because it's just there. Like it's tangible. I can look at it. It's very weird. And a friend of mine was at the Grove in LA and she saw it and took a picture of it. And she's like, it's here. Like it's at the Grove. And I was like, that's crazy. So then I made a pilgrimage and went all the way across town to go look at it for myself. And it's very surreal. And it also helps, you know, show my parents that I do have a real job because they don't understand how the internet works, but they understand how a billboard works.
That's great. So is that kind of like, I've never had my work published in print before, but I know you have like for Fangoria and maybe mm-hmm. other places as well. Well, obviously your book, but is it kind of like seeing your work in print in that way versus a digital kind of thing?
Oh yeah. It's something about like, I can't hold a billboard in my hands, but like if I got up there, I could, like I could touch it. There is something about it feeling tangible that makes it feel very special, or the fact that like because it's physical or because it like there's proof that it existed outside of the internet, because the internet can just like delete anything, like it can just go away and then you can never find, like I have so many articles that I've written for publications over the years that have just gone away that I'll never get back, and that's really heartbreaking. I have screenshots of stuff like pull quotes that have been used digitally, but I don't know, something about this is just, it's just different. It's different.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So the other thing, you mentioned a movie tattoo in the Criterion Mobile Closet, but you got another one, right?
I got another one. So every time I come on Slash Film Daily, I say hi, which is a reference to the movie Heavyweights. And I finally got a Heavyweights tattoo. And the idea actually came from another Slash Film Features writer, Ben Silverio. who also loves the movie Heavyweights. But there's a scene when Ben Stiller's character, Tony Perkis, is raiding all of their cabins for all of the junk food that they've stored away. For those that don't know what this movie is, it's an early Disney comedy movie. It's one of Judd Apatow's first movies. And Ben Stiller plays a like psychotic fitness instructor who takes over a fat camp. But the movie is like very pro fat and like very affirming in ways that make me feel very seen. And I love this movie. I hold it very near and dear to my heart. But he's raiding through the bunk and a young Kenan Thompson is in there. And Ben Stiller's like, come on, we're still friends. Give me a hug. And when he goes to give him a hug, he then like frisks him and finds in his sock a clown Pez, like a Pez dispenser clown. And he unloads the Pez dispenser. And when the Pez fall to the floor, it makes the sound of bullets. And he says, looks like my man's packing. So I got the clown Pez dispenser tattooed on my ankle so that I am always packing.
Wow, that is incredible. And also, I really enjoyed Heavyweights as a kid. I've seen that movie a ton of times. And I had no idea the hi-hi-hi-a thing came from it. It's been so long since I've seen it. I didn't realize that was a reference. That's been right under my nose this whole time.
Hi-hi-hi-a.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. I should have put that together a long time ago.
Yeah. It's it's so stupid, but like that movie means so much to me. And especially the older I get, the more I am constantly on a quest for media that does not portray fat people as like all these horrible stereotypes. And it's crazy to me that a children's comedy from Judd Apatow is still one of the best examples that we have. But that's why that movie rocks. And I wanted to immortalize it on my body. So I will be a 90-year-old woman someday with a clown Pez dispenser on my ankle and be like, yeah, I'm packing.
Very cool. All right. So for people who have not seen Heavyweights, I'm pretty sure that's still streaming on Disney Plus. Okay. Excellent. So check that out. All right. Let's get into what we've been reading, BJ. What have you been reading recently?
Sure. So it's a new book that came out, I want to say like 2 days ago, but I had pre-ordered it and my wife and I got a earlier copy. But the book is called The Dad Rock That Made Me a Woman. It's by Nico Stratus. Nico Stratus is one of the coolest music and culture writers out there. She's written a bunch of stuff at like Rolling Stone, but she wrote a book. It's a lot of essays, a little bit of a memoir about being a closeted trans woman and finding her true like identity and like things that resonated with her in dad rock. So movies like there are bands like Wilco and then also like Michael Stipe and Bruce Springsteen, and how it, you know, helped her come to terms with her own gender identity, because this is something my wife and I talk about quite a bit, because my wife and I are also like big dad rock proponents, is that when people talk about like the trans experience or anything with gender identity, a lot of times you hear very stereotypical stories like, oh, I was, you know, a 5-year-old and I was playing with dolls and that's how I knew. And it's like, well, not everybody comes to it through those like very binary ways of thinking. Sometimes you do find affirmation in places that you're not expecting it. You feel seen in music that you weren't expecting to find yourself in. And so I'm about halfway through it, and it's really beautiful and really interesting. And Nico is such like a funny writer. So I highly recommend it to anybody who's interested in sort of personal memoir. If you love good music, and if you want to just read somebody who's really funny.
Awesome. So that is The Dad Rock That Made Me a Woman by Nico Stratus. Let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, and dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family schedule onto a sleek digital display, so you focus on important things like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.
All right, so let's get into what we've been watching. You and I both had a chance to see The Righteous Gemstones, which the fourth and final season has now concluded on HBO and Max. And I guess without really spoiling anything, just what a great show this was. Oh. I came to it very late. I know that you and I think Hannah and some of our other Slash Film editors have been a proponent of this show for a long, long time. And I want to say I caught up with it right around the time that season three was airing, or maybe season three had just ended. But man, what a great show this is. And it's so different than what I thought it was going to be from just seeing the trailers and being like, I don't know. I don't really think this show is for me. And I'm so glad that I caught up with it, because the comedic performances on the show are truly like some of the best and most memorable comedic performances in any TV show that I've ever seen. And I feel like I'm going to be thinking about these characters, particularly Judy Gemstone, and just the way she talks, maybe for the rest of my adult life. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the show for really like ending on its own terms. It didn't feel like a final season of the show until like the last 10 or 15 minutes of the last episode. And I think that's because Danny McBride has said in previous interviews and stuff that like, basically they didn't know that it was going to be the last season until they were actually working on it. So it's not like they were planning throughout the whole season for this to reach an end point. It was just kind of like, they felt like as they were going along, you know, we probably said everything that we need to say with the show, and it's reached sort of a logical conclusion, a natural end point. So basically they just kind of tied things up in the very end. And he was saying like that he didn't really, he's seen finales of other shows where it kind of seems like the actors are coming through more than the characters. And like that experience of, you know, we've all been together doing this for years and like, isn't this great? And we're not going to see each other anymore. And like, it can get kind of sappy and saccharine because those are the real emotions that the real people are playing. And he didn't really want that experience or that emotionality to be infused into this whole season of Gemstones. He wanted it to feel like a show that felt consistent all the way through, that you could rewatch and you wouldn't really have that kind of bump on like, oh man, this is where they started to realize like things are going downhill in terms of like they're heading toward an endpoint or whatever. So I think it was just really exceptionally effectively done and managed as a project. And God, it's just so freaking funny, this show. I know you loved it too. So what stood out to you about the final season?
Oh God, I absolutely loved it so, so much. I loved the introduction of Megan Mullally as Lori Millsap. I thought she was like a perfect character to introduce and help kind of close out the series. Judy is absolutely that girl. Edie Patterson is one of the funniest people to ever walk the planet. And I love that she's finally getting her due after all these years. But as something that I wrote a thing about the finale and how I felt like, yeah, the show ended very much on its own terms. It felt very perfect for the world. But the thing that makes The Righteous Gemstones great is that every week you tune in to hear people say lines that no human being has ever said before. And yes, that's what makes the show so good. Like, I forever, Castaway is the Tom Hanks by himself one. Like, that's what that movie is. It's so funny. And you know, anything Judy has ever said just lives in my brain that I'm not going to repeat on mic because you'll get demonetized immediately. Just chaos. It's just a chaos show. And then Kelvin and Keith, I think, are like, I could probably write like a book about why their characters are so important and why the writing is just so perfect for them. I love the show. It's so good. I'm so sad that it's going away. I hope that, I don't know, they do like a spinoff movie, or Danny McBride, I know, has joked like that they would do like a tent revival tour. And I was like, I will be there if that happens. Are you joking?
Oh man. Yeah. That would be really great. Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned that about like the show having a unique comedic voice, because I feel like, I don't know, maybe we're guilty of that, of saying that about other shows, but this is really a case where I cannot think of another show that sounds the way this one does. The way that the dialogue works in the show is truly unlike anything I've ever heard in my life. Like, just the way that these people construct sentences, and it all makes sense, and it all works with their bizarre little brains. Like, you can tell that they're not just, you know, putting on airs or like doing it to hit a joke quantity that they're going for over the course of an episode. It just all flows so naturally from these bonkers characters. And it really has like, it feels like this kind of this sealed little universe that they've created where these characters just talk this way, and it just makes perfect sense within the context of the show. So
yeah, the only thing that I can even compare it to is like the Righteous Gemstones is to America what Letterkenny is to Canada. Like Letterkenny and Shoresy, like the 1-2 punch of those shows, they also have a lot of like very particular ways of communicating and very specific, like not just dialect, but just like slang. And like, and it's just, it is what it is. It's not explained. You just have to like get on board and understand it. And the Righteous Gemstones does that, but in a way that is like very, very American, because they're in South Carolina, and it just, it works. It's genius. It's absolute genius.
So good. Okay. So I also wanted to give a quick shout out to The Rehearsal Season 2. This is Nathan Fielder's show. It's also on HBO and Max. And are you watching this?
I have to wait because The Rehearsal stresses me out so bad that I have to like make sure I'm in an okay headspace to tune into it. Because Nathan Fielder's particular brand of like comedy and storytelling and all of that, like it gets into my brain and then I can't let go of it for days.
Yeah, it's I mean, talk about unique experiences that like he is doing something that I've never seen. And I really don't think it's an exaggeration to say that like there's never been a show like this before, because it's just so bizarre. The tangents that he'll go down, and my God, BJ, I think it's the third episode of season two, is like one of the most deranged but hysterical things that I've seen on TV in so, so long. And I can't wait for you to watch it, because it's one of those where you're like, I think my wife and I like were watching it on the couch and we had turned to each other several times and kind of like had our hands like Kevin McAllister in Home Alone, like hands on our cheeks, like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening kind of thing, several times in the episode. So it is, I guess it's fair to call it like a deeply uncomfortable watch at times, especially because you're like, what is the end goal of this? But as a narrative experiment, it is, I mean, just fascinating, doesn't even begin to cover it. So that's The Rehearsal. It's a really, I can't even like really describe the premise of the show, because it spins off into so many different areas that it just seems like any one or two line description would do it a disservice. But if you appreciate TV that pushes boundaries and kind of goes outside the box, this is definitely something that should be on your radar. So that's The Rehearsal Season 2. What have you been watching, BJ?
So I have two very, very far ends of the spectrum. Last night, my wife and I had a friend over who is currently going through like a series of erotic cinema and wanted to watch a bunch of erotic movies. And we are the friends who owned Cruising. So I rewatched William Friedkin's Cruising for the first time since he passed. I watched it when Friedkin passed away. And I completely understand the backlash the movie got from a lot of gay activists when it was being made, but I love this movie. I think that it is so sweaty and sexy and thrilling, and I don't think there's ever been a movie that has had this many like openly gay men on screen at the same time, because they just shot those bar scenes in functioning gay bars because they couldn't find extras to fill them, because even like extras in New York City were like, I can't be in the gay movie, it'll ruin my career. So they were like, I guess we're just gonna have this. So then everyone in the crew is also dressed like leather daddies, which is why there are these amazing photos of William Friedkin directing wearing cutoff jean shorts and nothing else, because if he got caught on camera, he had to make sure he looked the part. But I think that it is just an absolutely phenomenal piece of work. I think Al Pacino is so unbelievably good in it. I think there's so much that the movie says and doesn't say about proximity to queerness and the way that men, you know, might have things awakened in themselves and then just shove that shit down, and how that manifests in really weird ways. I am fully on the team of people who have reclaimed and reassessed that movie. I think it's a masterpiece. I think it is like one of the most important works of queer cinema ever made. I would die for the trans woman at the front, at the, like the opening of this movie, that are dealing with Joe Spinell, his being gross, sweaty self. The movie rocks. It still rocks after all these years.
I have still never seen Cruising. It's been on my list for so long, and hearing you talk about it in such high terms definitely makes me want to move it up my list. So
it's just, it's so incredible. And like, it's also, it's, it was so good to watch it with other people where they start like with another person, because there's so many actors in it. Like Paul Sorvino is in this. Karen Allen is in this. Ed, like a very young Ed O'Neill is in this. So the entire time you just hear somebody go, is that who I think it is? And I'm like, yes, it is.
So for people who haven't seen it, just give like the very brief log line. I, from what I know about this movie, and tell me if I'm wrong, I think it's about Al Pacino playing a cop who has to go undercover as a gay man. Is that right?
Yes. So what okay. it's about is that there is a perceived like serial killer attacking and targeting specifically gay men in New York City, and specifically gay men in like the leather scene of New York City. And so they need somebody to go undercover, and Al Pacino looks the most like the victims. So they essentially send him in there as bait, but he's a rookie cop. So this is very much like, hey, you're going to have to prove yourself. And the further he goes in undercover, the more, I guess, humanizing, I guess I would say, he starts to view the gay community in a lot of ways of, you know, seeing how police mistreat gay men, trans women, sex workers, like all of these implicit biases that just exist within the judicial system are brought out. But it's fantastic. And you get scenes of Al Pacino in a black tank top, sweatily dancing with a bunch of other very hot Italian men. It's awesome.
Amazing. Okay, so that's Cruising. And then what else have you been watching?
And then the last thing that I watched is I watched Blinded by the Light from 2019. This is the movie about a Pakistani-British teenager who discovers Bruce Springsteen's music and falls in love with it, and it like changes his whole life. It is so earnest, like so like unapologetically earnest, that I love this movie, because I feel like movies today are allergic to sincerity, and this movie is like, we don't care if you think that it's corny for me to like run through the city with my girlfriend and my friends to Born to Run. That's what the song makes me feel, so that's what I'm gonna feel. And I love it. It's such like, it's such a sweet movie, but at the same time is unafraid of acknowledging the like horrible racism that Pakistani immigrants faced in England in the 80s. But oh my god, movie rocks.
So are you a big Bruce Springsteen person?
So yes and no. Like, I love The Boss. I love what his music has to say. I also love that Bruce Springsteen is one of our greatest leaders in kissing the homies and being okay with like just guys kissing their best friend. I love that. I love that about him so very much. I am not nearly as hardcore as a lot of people are, but the older I get, the more I appreciate his music, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering, because I have basically only heard his radio hits. I've not really done any sort of dive into his discography at all. But I was thinking about the Beatles movie. I think it was called Yesterday from a few years ago. Yeah.
Yes.
And I feel similarly about the Beatles music. I have never done a deep dive. I only know the hits. And I think I was one of the few people who really liked that movie, despite me generally not even being like a huge Beatles fan. So I was wondering, because I have such a loose relationship to Springsteen's music, if I might have a similar experience here, where like maybe hearing or experiencing this music through characters who really love it might help me love it by extension or something like that. So yeah, I don't know. I'll have to check this one out. I definitely missed it when it came around. So
yeah, this one, it came out not long after Yesterday, and a lot of people did not like Yesterday. So I think this movie got a little bit of collateral damage, and that they're like, I'm not going to go see that with Springsteen if I didn't like it with the Beatles. But the love that these characters have for this music, and like, I am a firm believer that your first true love of your life is your first favorite musician or band, because like the way that I loved like boy bands in the early 90s is like the closest love that I have that's comparable to that is the love that I have with my wife. Just like, it feels like it's like coming out of your pores, love, like it's mm-hmm. an obsession. And so I love movies where people are discovering that for the first time, whether it's a movie, whether it's music, what have you, like just that you can't hide it sort of obsession. And to see that through a character that for all intents and purposes on paper, like shouldn't resonate with Bruce Springsteen's music because he is so like writing from the perspective of like working class Americans, but it's like, it doesn't matter. Like the message behind it is what transcends and can speak to this kid facing racism and like a very strict father. And this is the outlet that he has. And so like, it does add this like layer of like, it's more than just what the music is saying. It's like how it makes you feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's Blinded by the Lights. And then just a couple more sections here. I want to get through what we've been eating. I met up with Brad in Chicago, which was really awesome. We had a chance to see a movie that we're not allowed to talk about yet, so I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point in the future. We ate at Pequod's, which is a pizza place that was featured in The Bear. It's the scene where Richie basically like runs down the street to get a Pequod's pizza and like present it at the restaurant to this couple who happens to be in town who really love pizza, and to kind of like level up their dish or whatever. And my God, BJ, it's so good. The pizza is just incredible. It's this deep dish. There's no real Chicago style or deep dish scene where I'm from in Florida, where I live in Florida. And so just having my third eye opened to what this experience can be is kind of horrifying, because this is basically the only time I'm going to get this. And how am I supposed to live knowing that this exists and I'm not going to be able to have it? It's terrible. So it's wonderful and terrible at the same time. But what's your experience like with Pequod's?
I love Pequod's pizza. I think it is so good. I actually, like, a lot of people have been coming out of the woodwork since it was on The Bear, and it's like, it's actually not that good. Of course people like Pequod's. And I'm like, chill the fuck out. It's always been that good. Like, don't lie. It's good. I love Pequod's. I think it's absolutely delicious. I'm so jealous you got to have it. That is, like, the one thing that absolutely sucks about living in Los Angeles is pizza does not compare. And it doesn't even need to be deep dish. Just the sauce in Chicago pizza is different than the sauce out here. It's just, it's not the same. And I miss it dearly. And I miss tavern style, because no one does tavern style out here. And it makes me crazy. I cannot wait to go back to the Midwest later this summer so that I can eat pizza. So,
oh, man.
Very jealous that you got to have it.
That crust is just next level, and it was just slathered with pepperoni, like just covered in a way that I was not expecting and was so thrilled by. So that was amazing. And then it's also great. Speaking of The Bear, for lunch today, my wife and I walked to Mr. Beef, which is the place that is essentially the setting of the first season of the show, and got an Italian beef sandwich, and it was just as good as I was hoping. And I mean, I'm just still kind of like shaking from how good it was, because again, we just don't have anything like this in where I live. So it was transcendence, and I want to like sing a song to it or something, you know, like it's one of those things where you just have this, like this experience with food where it's just so beyond anything that I expected that, it just feels like, just saying it was great, it feels like it's somehow doing it a disservice, but it truly was great. So if you have the chance, check out Mr. Beef. It's absolutely worth going out of your way to get food there. So what have you been eating, BJ?
So as the listeners know, I love gimmick food. It's just my thing that I love to do. If it's a weird brand crossover, I'm trying it. I got let down, though. Doritos branded vodka, awful. Absolutely terrible. Not good at all. Not redeeming at all. So let me, as somebody who prides themselves in being a human trash compactor, be the one to tell you it's not worth the gimmick. It's not worth the $20 of like, ooh, maybe. It's not. It's bad. It's really bad. It just tastes, honestly, it tastes like you ate Doritos and then barfed. Like, and then like the weird stinging bile Dorito in your mouth. That's what it tastes like. It's atrocious. I tried making it with cocktails to try to fix it. I would rather drink Malort. It's awful.
Oh man. I don't know if we've ever had, what's the opposite of a recommendation? If there's a word for that, like a stay the hell away from this, as strongly delivered as that, because man, that makes me never, ever, ever want to try that. Is it supposed to be like, yeah, is it supposed to be like Cool Ranch or like nacho cheese nacho or like cheese. What kind of, oh my God. Okay. Wow.
Which like, well, I've had some like cheddar-y like sort of alcohols before that are like supposed to be somewhat in that family. And it's never been bad. It usually just tastes really artificial. This was just gross. And like, ugh, no.
Okay. So stay away from Doritos branded vodka. I'm glad you're doing the public service of telling people about that, BJ.
Listen, I drink then, so no one else has to.
There you go. And then the last section we have is what we've been playing. So what have you been playing recently?
So the Nintendo Switch has the ability to play some Nintendo 64 games, and so I've been doing that. I once again am not good at video games, but my wife has been playing a lot of like Wave Racer 64, and then when she's at work I play Wave Racer 64 because I don't need anyone witnessing my shame of how bad I am. But it is very fun, and it is like a fun challenge for me to be like, one of these days I'm gonna win a race and I'm finally going to be able to do the thing I couldn't do when I was 12. So that's been my main thing. Like we went through like a full gameplay like Banjo-Kazooie, and like that was really fun. But this, like, Wave Racer does not mess around. Like, this game is not playing. If you do not have it down perfectly, you lose. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it seems like a good mix between high stakes and low stakes, where, like, yeah, if you're outside the bounds or whatever, you're going to get, you're going to have to restart. But it's not like the intensity of, like, somebody popping around a corner and shooting your character in the head or something exactly. like that, right? So, yeah.
I have no one to blame but myself. So
awesome. All right. Well, that's going to do it for the final water cooler of the Slash Film Daily era. So you can find more about a lot of what we talked about at slashfilm.com. For the next 2 days, anyway, Slash Film Daily will be published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, and dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family's schedule onto a sleek digital display, so you focus on important things like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.